You are listening to Making Bank, where we uncover the mindset and success strategies of the top 1% so you can amplify your life and your business.
Welcome to Making Bank. I am Josh Felber, where we uncover the mindset and the success strategies of the top 1% so you can amplify your life and your business today. Super excited and honored for today's guest. Dr. John Seforek was once a chiropractor with a part-time real estate business. He retired at 49 with a retirement income of $240,000. He then wrote a book for his son in college, The Wealthy Gardener, Lessons on Prosperity Between Father and Son. The book became an Amazon bestseller, which sold over 70,000 copies in a year, hit number 46 worldwide on Audible, and was translated into 3 foreign languages, and was relaunched by Penguin this year. I'm super excited and honored to welcome Dr. John Seforek to Making Bank.
Josh, thank you. My pleasure, man, and I'm excited, so thank you.
For sure. Well, I guess tell us, so obviously you were a chiropractor at one point.
Yeah, that one point being about 2 decades.
So, okay. Yeah. Awesome. And did you start the whole real estate side of things as a side project, or like what made you want to do that?
Yeah, well, chiropractors do not have a 401k. There's no retirement there, right? So you eventually, it's a tighter margin than most people think too. You know, you see the guys that are dressed up. You see, we can have nice cars. We can have nice clinics. I can tell you that the business of chiropractic is not so good. The service of chiropractic is good. I have best patients in the world, great people. Latrobe, Pennsylvania, where I practiced, fantastic, middle class, you know, soul of the earth, Arnold Palmer, Mr. Rogers, those are the people that came from that area. But the margins were tight, brother. And so, you know, if you ever look at the future, you have to figure out somehow to get the money outside of your practice. And so that's how it entered. I needed a retirement income. That was my initial thoughts on it.
Got it. And I guess what kind of real estate did you focus on? Was it the single family, just kind of buying houses? Did you go for more the multi-family apartment complexes? I guess what was that like initial thing? Okay, cool. I'm ready to invest.
Isn't that the question, right? Like people say real estate. Well, you don't know what the heck they mean if you're really in real estate, because you realize there's a million different types of real estate.
For sure.
If they tell you, yeah, so they tell you in your fixer-uppers, I still don't know what they mean. So you have to drill down and drill down. So with me, as a chiropractor, I'm entering this. I'm not sure I'm going to make this a big thing for me. What's the safest way to do it? I'm testing the waters, man, just like putting my toes in the waters one step at a time. And the easiest exit strategy is certainly single family houses. No doubt about it. If you can find single family houses with the cash flow, the criteria that you're looking for, and you can in my area, then you go that way, because you can sell that to anybody, any homeowner. If you get into commercials right now, you're kind of stuck, because you can only sell that to investors. So my strategy was very safe. I didn't know if I wanted to do this for life. Let's see. And so if I'm going and just testing the waters, I'm looking for something I can get out of, that's for sure. So single families is where I started.
Cool. And then I guess, how did you come up? I know when I introduced you, you're like, okay, I want to come up with a retirement of $240,000 a year. You know, I guess, where did that number come from? And I guess, you know, how did you pick that?
It's a common question, and it's certainly speaks of my arrogance at a time when that was impossible. But sometimes I think that, you know, at 30, that's when I was down and out, right? I graduated from chiropractic college with $200,000 worth of student debt. Let's start there.
Okay.
So, okay, that's going to set things up in a way that we can all predict. It's going to be hard. And so at the age of 30, I have kids, I have a family, and I'm frustrated, man. And so that's the time to sit down and dream. If you can, you know, take a swing. It's not the time to respond in fear. There was just a time when I actually read the book, Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill, and I always owe so much to that book. And that allowed me, this blue-collar kid from the middle class, to start thinking a little bigger, right? That book will make you think bigger. You just spoke of mindset. That was your introduction. Yeah, well, I can speak of mindset, because it all starts with intention. And so my intention, to get around to answer your question, I wanted a river, Josh. I wanted a river. You know, people talk about wealth as, you know, they want a number. They want this big pile of cash. They want something like, I wanted a river the size of Amazon. And it's like it's not the company. I don't think they're saying that.
Well, I guess now it
I'm
could be
not
like
quite.
the size of Amazon, the
Yeah, I kind of missed that if I'm competing with Amazon, the company. But for me, man, I wanted something bigger. I wanted a retirement. I wanted a retirement without worries. I wanted to be that guy that could continue choosing and continue growing. And the number 240 actually was a round number of $20,000 a month. And I know that I needed, say, $100,000 to live on. That means I needed $150,000 before taxes. And it is a big number, because I see people talking about in the FIRE movement, they're talking about $30,000 and $50,000 of passive income. And I went for 240, Josh, and I went for 240 at a time when it was
Sure.
absurd to think about from my position. I didn't know where that was going to come from. I didn't know where the river was starting, but I made the goal anyway.
No, that's awesome. Obviously, you're coming up with the goals and the dreams and everything. What was kind of that time frame to reaching that, and what were some of those challenges, and did you think you may not hit that during that time frame?
That's definitely the challenge of it, Josh. When you make a bigger goal, sometimes you will get broken because you're not seeing the challenge being met. So much of what you do is just plain not visible in terms of your results in the day. It's like if you brush your teeth or skip your teeth today, it doesn't really matter. But if you skip and brush and skip and brush over and over and over, in 5 years it matters. And those things add up. And it's the same kind of thing with what I find is that I had to split my time. I had to give my time to my chiropractic clinic. That's what kept us alive. And then in the free time, I would move into, I always called it a split personality, Dr. John and Dirty John. And that's kind of how it was. My kids say, John, don't say that. It sounds like a pervert. And I say, I like the story though. So there was a split personality. And the guy that left the practice and put on the dirty jeans, dealt with dirty chiropractors, used to swear and cuss in the jobs, couldn't speak like that in my clinic. It was just a split personality. But I had to move into that to get what I wanted, to get gain, not just to tread water. So that's what it started looking like, buying and selling, splitting time, using my intention, that sort of thing. So it was really, really important to, in terms of just moving forward. Did I always know it was going to work? Oh God, I wish I did, because it would have been such an easier ride if you know the outcome in advance. The game of it is that you have to do it anyway with no promise, with no promise. If you can't do that, if you can't take that on, you're not going to last.
Right.
Gotta move forward without seeing the results today, period. And that's what it takes.
For sure. What I guess during this time, did you do all the rehab on the projects? Did you hire people in? I guess, what how did you handle that?
Hired. Yeah, had to, because keep in mind I'm working in a clinic. That's a 40 to 50 hour job. Then I'm moving in. Then I'm managing things. It sucked me in, man. I started this off saying, okay, this is how I do it without picking up a paintbrush. Well, never say never. You know how that goes. So yeah, I said that. Eventually, I picked up a paintbrush. Eventually, I'm the guy who takes all the garbage to the dump. So I'm hauling around this trailer. Then I'm the guy who's picking up all the material, bringing it to the site. Turns out I found out that I'm really a what do you call it? A general manager on site, That's what happens, right? You start getting sucked in because you find that your efficiencies, your effectiveness go way down without you there, and they go way up with you there, and you need your money back when you invest it. And so it just sucks you in. And so, yeah, by the end of it, am I in the sites? Am I dirty? I'm like a general contractor on site, cracking whips. I mean, like I said, in the it's we're flipping, we're renting, and we're doing chiropractic at the same time. And at the same time, I have a family. My kids have AAU basketball. So that was the game at that time of my life in the 30s and 40s.
I talk a lot on my different podcasts and shows and stuff, or other shows that I'm on, just about kind of like life and family and business, entrepreneurial integration and everything. I guess how did you manage that, making sure you got the time to connect with the kids and the wife, and then obviously two businesses, the rentals as well as the chiropractic.
And the flipping, I really look at them as three, right? So there was the rentals growing slowly. I ran out of money, like everybody will. So you move into flipping, and that's a much harder game. And then
Gotcha. Okay.
That's real. That's a full-time job flipping. So how do you? That's exactly the question. You have to figure out. And I always say that the people who do it wrong don't communicate with their families. The people who do it right, let them become a part of it. I was vulnerable, man. I suffered financially in my life, and there's not a day my kids didn't know what I was going through. They didn't know my greatest fears. They knew my motivations, my dreams for the family. Well, guess that didn't just happen. That's me sitting down and treating my kids like they were adults. And they got a great education along the way. And what I found was that the more I brought them in, and the more they saw me and my concerns, my fears, what my real motivations were, the more they supported that. And they will to this day tell their friends, and their friends envy the transparency of our relationship, where outside of our family, you might have said, well, look at him. He's gone away from his family. He doesn't care about that. Like, wait a minute, my kids will mist up in their eyes talking about the sacrifice now. Why is that? Because I communicated. So there's ambition, and there's also, that's on you. That's what I say. It's on you, the ambitious person, to make your family a part of that. Don't just run from that. That's your job.
No, that's great. And I guess what did that, and I think this is applies to a lot of it right now too, with everything going on with the COVID and pandemic stuff and everything else, is that open communication. Like, what did that communication look like? I guess what is that back and forth and that depth that you dove into?
Well, if you would imagine sitting down with your wife and just telling her how scared you are because you have shrinking insurance reimbursement, we don't have a whole lot of savings, what does it look like? It looks like me feeling financial fears and telling them about it, facing that, and really helping them to feel what I'm feeling. It's just me being vulnerable. That's what it is. I mean, if you're not acting like I'm some sort of dad on a pedestal, but rather. And that's the game, right? My dad was Superman. I mean, God bless him, but I was unprepared for life. My kids come in and they say, oh, in their 20s, so I'm having a rough pothole here at this stage of my life. Ah, dad went through that. Oh, God, it's not working out for me. Dad went through that. I remember when dad had his fears. I remember when dad did, they were educated through me. It wasn't hidden. Money, how parents will take that off the board and not show you about that? They don't talk about money and sex. Well, they did. I talked everything about money. My kids knew my numbers to the penny. Why would I hide it from them? Guys, this is what I'm doing, why I'm doing it. And the big number you toss out there, it's like I don't my whole family, nobody knew that. $240,000. We don't talk about that in Western Pennsylvania, what we make, but I did to my family. And the only reason I bring it up on a podcast like yours is not to impress you, but to impress maybe a listener out there that if I can do that, maybe they can achieve their goals too. It wasn't that spectacular. Like 240,000 was doable, so maybe your 80,000 is doable too, right? That's the only reason I bring that up. But my kids knew the numbers all the time.
No, and I think that's great. I mean, just with a lot of people that are out of work right now, or don't have the money to even potentially pay their rent or their bills or their mortgages and stuff like that. Having that open communication to communicate with their family so everybody's on the same page, working towards that same focus and goal, as well as the people that, whether they're landlords or their mortgage companies and stuff like that, and having that communication so everybody's working together to be able to, stay, at this level. So as they kind of start to move back into the workforce or things like that, they're not so far down in a bad situation
I don't know
with
about you.
nobody knowing.
I'm sorry, Josh. I don't know about you, but I've always loved when you saw people, when you see people, maybe when they come on your show, and they admit the times when they are down and out. And I do that a lot in my book. For that very reason, I admit it. This book was for my son, right? And so I talk about the time whenever I had three foreclosures in a row that lost money. That was a whole year. And I came on the biggest foreclosure, the next one, and I was down and out. I fired teams of contractors. And one night I'm just covered in dust. all by myself in this house we dubbed the Titanic. My kids know about this. I take a knee and I just sob, man. I'm in my middle 30s. And that's, I tell them, this isn't the worst moment of my life. This isn't the lowest. This might be the best moment of my life, the biggest, because at that point, I gave it all. I gave everything. And that's what they have to see that. When they understand that, they say, God, you know, and I'm like trying not to choke up here. Right? They say, look at Dad, look what Dad did. And so they understand it now. They get it, man. But they only get it if you admit it to them. Like, what if I'm trying to be the hero on the pedestal, you know, the knight in shining armor coming home? They'll get that lesson now. And so that's why the communication is so important.
No, that's awesome. And when you were talking there, you mentioned, you know, your book, The Wealthy Gardener. I guess why did you come up with that book? Or like, did this journey kind of, it's like, okay, cool, you know, here's my journey, I want to put it in a book? Or, you know, what is that whole pivotal point for you?
You know, it's the question I've never been able to convey properly. So I always just try to tell a story, and it seems to do it best. I say that whenever I was 20 years old, Josh, I felt like I walked out of my own house, and now it was my time to provide, just like we all do. We become adults. We have to get this adulting thing down. I walk out of, and man, I'm ready to take on the world. I was so full of ambition and certainty. I was going to show the world how successful I was. I didn't know what a butt kicking was coming my way, man. And I walked out the door and I said that I travel, you know, a mile and go over a hill, and my work is on the other side, right? And I find out that I'm a battler. I'm a warrior. I have to fight every day of my life. And I didn't know I was signing up for this. But that's how I put bread on my table. And so every night I would come home, I'd climb that mountain, go home to my place. And I had scars on me from that battle. I'm losing more than I'm winning throughout my 20s. And anybody that's been through that struggle gets it. When you don't have money, all you think about is money. You know, it's not money. It's not really important until you don't have enough of it. Then it's like oxygen. And so the 20s were like that for me. And it's just a butt whooping. And at the 30s now, thank God I got that intention down. That's when I talk about the setting the goal of 240. It sounds extraordinary, sounds nuts, it's impossible. But man, life is better when you're clear. You now have simplicity. And through my 30s, you're just focused on a simpler goal, one thing. You're more focused. And so through the 30s, I start to build some confidence. I get it, man. I'm fighting. I'm building. I'm still getting scars, but I'm beating and winning as many battles as I'm losing. In the 40s, I start winning. Finally, I start carrying myself with a little more dignity, a little more self-worth. I'm starting to win the battle day after day. And finally, at the age of 49, I come home and I say, I won. And it doesn't feel like my opponent died. He's done on the other side of the hill now. That's the financial condition of life. I beat him. And I come back to my house and I sit on the couch and I'm just exhausted, to be honest with you. It's not a sense of elation. It's just a sense of relief. Thank God it's over. I didn't want to be in that battle anyway. And so I'm sitting there on the couch and I see my son walking towards the door, and he's carrying a sword. He's covered in armor. And I say, Mike, what are you doing? And he says, Dad, I'm 20 years old. I'm going to show this world what I got, man. I'm going to battle like you did. I'm going to be just like you, Dad. And I said, son, get over here. Sit with me on the couch. I got to tell you how to battle. I have to give you my lessons. I have to spare you the learning curve, at least, if you're going to go to battle. And that's why I wrote The Wealthy Gardener. I had to.
No, that's great. And what, I guess, I remember seeing some of your information. I guess, how did you come up with the name, or why did you select that name of the book? I mean, it's great because people are like, oh, wait, you know, and it creates that curiosity. But I guess, why did you select it?
You know, the garden has always been a timeless metaphor throughout all of history for a person's time on earth. And so I was always attracted to the metaphor, first of all. Wealth, to me, I wanted a book about money. So many books waffle. I read them all, and they'll waffle about here's how to get money, here's how to get relationships, here's how to get, and they cover their bases with the 8 different things of how to get. I wanted a money book, like Think and Grow Rich, one that served that purpose for me. So a wealthy gardener, nothing but. And so at your time on earth. And so that was what was important to me. And I, you know, gardeners, man, they're an interesting breed. I just saw my mom over there in the yard just earlier today. She's dirty. She's sweating. She's 82 years old. They're not happy unless they're doing something that they're engaged in. They dream, they work, they learn. That's a great example for how to live life. And so I was attracted to all of that.
like, where are you headed now? I mean, with everything, are you still investing in real estate? You know, what's kind of that next phase of your journey here? Because you kind of, you know, hit the I made it point, and, you know, are you traveling now? Are you, well, maybe not right now, but.
So where am I? I'm 55 years old. I call it the back nine of my life, maybe the fall season of my life right now. And if you do it right, I believe that you can then get yourself out of that money trap. I shouldn't even call it a trap, but it does take up all your time chasing the buck. If you can get yourself beyond that, I think that any person will eventually say hooray and sit around and feel freedom until they don't want to do that anymore. And then the human being always wants to find fulfillment, satisfaction, to find out their life is useful. And so what's left for me, I really think that at this stage, all that I know, and I'll always say that I hold the right to change my mind, is that I see a need to alleviate financial suffering. You know, without my own suffering, I might not feel that need. But it was so terrible for me that I know there's people out there, and I believe I can help that. So why not that for me? So that's what I'm doing right now.
Awesome. And then what, how are you doing that through? Are you coming out with another book, or, you know, what are kind of those, you know, helping people eliminate financial suffering process or steps?
Well, that's the question, right? The question is, like, if a tree falls in the forest and makes a sound, did it really make a sound? Well, if you write a book and nobody reads it, did you really write a book?
Right.
I mean, what? It's, okay, yeah, here's my book. It's under a rock. Well, you know, I can say this, that what am I doing? I'm talking to Josh. Sure, there's probably people listen with ambition. Those are my people. All right, forget the bottom 90% that don't care about what they want, the complacent people. That's not my group. My group is like me, the ambitious people. And so I would say that I have kind of a need to talk to the ambitious people. And I have, I guess you could say, I have an arrogance to believe that I could help them. And so that's where I am right now, you know?
No, that's great. And I mean, I think with, you know, what you're looking to do and kind of that direction that you're headed, there is a, even now, there's such a significant opportunity where people need that in their life or in everything, whether it's, you know, coming out of now a job loss with everything here going on, or, you know, their business failed or whatever. Okay, you know, what is that next steps? How do I break through these current challenges that I'm facing and then start to rebuild wealth and rebuild, you know, myself into my passion or something that's going on?
Yeah, you just said something really, really important in the middle of all that to me, because you said, how do I rebuild myself? Boy, isn't that a great, that's a great line to me. Yeah, you must understand a lot. You know, that's said by people who have gone through things. And so, yeah, you do have to rebuild yourself. And, you know, I'm not going to sugarcoat that. People say, well, how do you help those people? It's tough, okay? Those of us who have stood at the end of that cliff, it's tough. And you know what? It does. It's just going to suck for a while. It is. No way around it. Don't talk to me about, you know, silver linings. Life sucks right now, but I can get through this day. Sometimes that's the goal. And so, yeah, we've all been there. Getting back to, what is my intention? Like, what is the great intention of my life? I mean, think about the whole metaphor of a garden and the whole metaphor of a farmer. You know, the Wealthy Gardener is a group of parables in the book. There's this, one of the first and foremost parables is a farmer who's not satisfied with life. And the neighboring farmer comes over and says, look, if you're not satisfied, maybe you should increase it up to 70 acres. You know, you have 112 acres. Why don't you use 70 of those? Farmer says, that makes sense. So he starts using 70 of them. He starts getting better results. Well, a couple of years later, he's not happy because those results are better, but he's still getting a mixed harvest. It's not all the same crop. It's not working for him yet. And so the neighbor comes over, talks to them. You really have to become vigilant with the seeds that you're planting. You got to really scrutinize that. That makes sense. Farmer does that. He starts only perfect, the same group of seeds, nothing else. 70 acres. Okay, that's working. So now he's making more money, but in his free hours, what's happening? He's making more money, but he's spending it poorly, and it's not leading to wealth. So what is the cause? What is the problem? What is the solution? The fundamental aspect of all finance in my life, No doubt about it is your intention with daily intention. And it's easy to forget about it. Daily intention, you're going to be planting the right seeds. You're going to be using a lot of your time. And you know, you're going to be making those seemingly insignificant choices day after day, like brushing your teeth, that actually work toward a better result, right? The things that you cannot do, that's how it works. And it's all about intention. And in that story, there's 112 acres, just like there's 112 hours, waking hours of our life. And so you can see the corollary between the parable of a garden and the parable of a plot of land. And that's what would a person do right now? Control your intention. It's a great time to decide what you want in life. I say that's what you got.
Awesome. No, for sure. Where can people get more information about you? You know, where do you want them to find you at?
You know, Josh, I'm a lazy guy. I could say that beast underneath here, I'm sure you're going to put some show notes in there.
Yeah.
You can link over to a page. I'll have a dedicated page based on show notes so a person can learn more. One thing you'll find at my site is I'm a very poor salesman. There's nothing to sell over there. So it's just an educational resource. And so if I'm trying to sell anything, it's a financial philosophy that has helped me. Follow Josh's link. That's what I say.
Cool. Awesome. Yeah, we'll have it linked here and take them right to your site and everything. So, John, really appreciate your time today, guys. I hope you guys were focused on what he was saying, pulling from the different stories that John, talked about and went through in this interview. And make sure you guys were taking notes. There's a ton of great information packed into this. And John, really just appreciate your time and honored to have you on the show today.
My pleasure, Josh. Thank you.
I am Josh Felber. You are watching Making Bank. Get out and be extraordinary.
Thank you for listening to Making Bank. If you have enjoyed this episode, please leave a review. And sharing is caring. Follow Josh Felber on Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram for more. You can also listen to Making Bank on Amazon Alexa, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and watch on Apple TV, Success Thinkers Network, Amazon Fire, and YouTube.